Hi, everyone. Welcome back to High Vibes and a Mic. I'm your host, Veronique. Today, I speak with Whitney. She believes that anyone can live a beautiful life, that gratitude is the birthplace of joy, that people matter, that love is the answer, that everyone is creative and some of us have just forgotten, and that it's worth trying to be a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday. She has bootstrapped two businesses to seven figures, has a degree in interior design, studied management at Parsons in New York City, and has had her work featured in O Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, and on The Today Show twice. She was featured as one of Country Living Magazine's Women Entrepreneurs in 2008. One of her favorite dreams come true, though, is her husband, David, and their three children. And today we are going to talk about her new book, Organize First, Decorate Second.
Hi, Whitney. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you too, because we're going to talk about something that really touched my heart. Being, you know, more organized in the house and, taking care of your mental health, you know, with clutter and everything that doesn't belong or belong in your house, but you don't, not really sure what to do with it. So you wrote a book about this and we're going to talk about your book. But first, let's start, you know, explain why you wrote that book. I was reading that you were raised very organized in the house, very organized, like every Saturday. You were clean, you were not watching cartoon, you were cleaning the house. Same for me in my house. Every weekend we had to clean the house. And that kind of traumatized me. Also, you know, when you grow up, you keep that in your mind. And after a year, you don't want to do it anymore. So tell us about that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you asked that question, because that is, if there's anything that I hope people get out of this book, it's actually healing, I think, that this idea that home is so important to all of us, but sometimes that's for good reasons and sometimes that's for bad reasons. And, you know, my faith is very important to me. It has carried me through some very hard times in life. And if I am going to, just one approach I've always taken to the hard things of life is that I forget which scripture reference, but Paul says, I am thankful for trials of many kinds. And I just think, okay, if we are to be thankful for everything that happens to us, then how do I treat the more challenging things that happen to me? Like, where do I categorize those challenging, difficult experiences? And I think they become education. I think they become something that, well, even as to go towards a more mental health angle on things, Stephen Covey in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People says that we all have a sense of agency. We all have the ability to respond to the deck of cards that we've been dealt, to the hand that we've been given. And we may not have chosen those cards, but we still get to choose how to respond to the things that have happened to us. And so there was a lot of stuff that my parents did right. And there was a lot of stuff that created some trauma. And I don't say that to shame them or even cast blame, but just to say, like, this is a thing that happened. Can we learn from it? You know, can we grow from this? Can this be part of, you know, degree from the school of hard knocks, the challenging things? And if I can look at the hard and challenging things as a gift, it shifts my perspective on those a little bit. And I can start to find reasons to be grateful for them. But I do recognize within myself this inner, that my inner teenager, the Whitney who is still 13, 14, 15 years old, she does not like cleaning her room. She still doesn't. But I think part of dealing with the problem of a messy house is admitting to yourself that, like, sort of where some of this came from. You know, where did the, and for me, I think it was rebellion. I don't think it was, rebellion is such an interesting word, because I don't I was not a bad kid. I wasn't like drinking, doing drugs, having sex. Like, I just wasn't keeping my room clean. And that led to a lot of knockdown, drag out fights in our house. And now that I'm a grown up and my house needs to stay clean, not just for me, but for my family, because we function better in a clean environment, I'm having to deal with some of that emotional fallout from some of those experiences growing up. And so writing this book was, and it was so important for me to put that narrative in there, first of all, because I think it's a good writing technique. I think it makes it more interesting than a book that's just like, do this, do that, measure the drawers and make sure that when you take the measurements to Target when you buy your organizational bins. So I think the story makes it more interesting. Yeah. And so I wanted to include that. But anyway, that's
yeah, it's more relatable when you talk about your husband, your kid, you know, in the book. I really like, you know, the way you start the book. When you talk about your parents, it made me think about my mom. My mom is what we call not a complicated hoarder, but she likes to keep a lot of things. And my brother and I will always have to push her to get rid of some stuff. And so you said in your book, you're joking that your parents, that you took the hoarder sign from your parents, okay? Because they like to, your family like to collect items. My mom is the same. She likes to collect everything. She likes to keep everything. And I think because of that, when I first moved out, I had nothing in my house. I didn't want anything in my house. I was like a minimalist, nothing. But now I have a family, I have a husband, I have kids. And I remember once she came to visit and she told me, wow, you're wasting that you have nothing in your house, but you're starting to get a bit like me now. And that really scared me because it was getting more and more stuff in the house. And I like that in your book, you talk about the maximalism with meaning. So what do you mean by that? Can you explain to our listeners?
Yes.
Because that's completely the opposite, right?
Right. It is opposite of minimalism. Things make me happy. That's also part about where I came from. My mom would, I mean, we had a beautiful home, but she was very thrifty about acquiring her beautiful things. They came from estate sales. They came from garage sales. You know, it wasn't just, we're going to go to the local big box store and buy some more stuff today. It was not that, you know, so along with this rigid, structural, it has to be a certain way upbringing, I also learned to appreciate really beautiful things. She taught me what quality looks like in a piece of furniture. And she taught me about history, the history of design. I mean, we didn't just buy chairs. We waited until we found the perfect set of Georgian 18th century with needlepoint, you know, cushion chairs for the dining room. And then we took really good care of them, come hell or high water. And so I love quality. I love things. And hand in hand with quality, there's a sense of story. I mean, that's part of history, is that things come with a provenance, you know, they come with, when you go to an art gallery, I was in the French Quarter in New Orleans once. There is an antique store there called M.S. Rau, R-A-U, and it survived Hurricane Katrina. So we duck in, and the front of the store is kind of like a jewelry shop with like cases and things like that. And then you get towards the back, and there are these pieces of furniture on daises, like on stages, like elevated platforms, like you would see in a museum. And a salesperson comes up to us and starts asking us, and I instantly have a ton of questions. Tell me about that. Why does that thing have so many drawers? What's going on with that? All of this is for sale. It's not a museum. But the salesperson, the gentleman, is acting like a museum guide almost. He knows the history and the provenance of every single piece there. And I think I was not a customer because I could not afford anything in that store. But I had the most delightful afternoon with that man, and he loved it too. I think he knew how to sell something. I think he knew that it was the sense of story that sold things, that people don't spend what unearthly sum, you know, $38,000 or something on a chest of drawers just because it's, they're not going to put that in their bedroom and then stick their underwear in it, you know, like it's going, right? Like it's going someplace because it was Napoleon's. I'm not exaggerating. Like they had Napoleon's bedroom suite there. You can buy Napoleon's bedroom. This stuff is not only in museums. Like you can find this stuff in antique shops if you know where to look. And I said, my mom was with me, actually. We were there for a wedding. He said, I said, you don't have much art out. And he said, oh, the art is in the back. It's behind a hidden door. Do you want to see it? I said, yes. I looked at my mom. I'm like, do you want to see it? Shocked me. She said, no. I'm like, why do you not want to see the art behind the hidden door? Like, full on, let's go, sir. So she went out. She left. I don't know. I am an artist. I paint. My grandmother painted. That's definitely an itch that I inherited as well. And so we walk back there and it's all dark and moody. And the first painting on the right when I walked in was spotlit with a light from above. And it was a Monet. And I just, it was a Monet. I mean, it was a seascape that Monet had painted. And to be able to stand, you know, in a museum, they rope that stuff off. I could like put my nose on that painting and smell it if I wanted to. And I was like, how much is that? And he said, well, it's like $1.6 million. But then, and he knew I was not in the market to buy a painting, but I think he was just trying to educate me about how this worked. And he, so really kindly, he said, but you know, that's not like how it works. Like you're allowed to like make an offer on it. I was like, so you just still, keep like I'm not.
Very expensive painting at the back like this. He's not scared that somebody's going to rob him.
It's behind a secret door. It was behind a hidden door that, and so, and they were afraid during Hurricane Katrina that, that they were going, that they were going to be, the shop was going to get looted. But yeah. He said they were some of the last people that left. They boarded up everything. They didn't know if they, they're in the French Quarter and they, it actually didn't flood. It was one of the few places that didn't flood. It was a miracle that it didn't flood. And they just, they left. They were the first, the last people out and the first people back in, they said, and they boarded it up and it didn't get looted. But no, it's a, if you are in New Orleans and you want a museum tour with a, and it's the provenance. I mean, it's the whole thing about this story. If I could have afforded a $1.6 million Monet painting, I would have bought it and I'd be showing it to you right now because it's all about the story. And that's what, and so that's what I love about stuff is that it doesn't, it's not just stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, it is. Right after my book, the manuscript went to press, my best friend lost her house in the Altadena fire in January, the fires in LA.
Yeah. That's
I talk about her throughout the book. Her name's E. And it was not lost on me this, like, just all of a sudden, how life, here I am submitting a manuscript that's all about my love of home. And I talk about my relationship with my best friend E and how she has influenced my love of home. And now she doesn't have a home, you know? And so she's in the rebuilding process and I've been trying to support her throughout that. And one of the things that we have grieved, and I just have tried to sit with her in this because I cannot personally relate to all the pain and angst that she's experienced, but is the loss of story. Every single thing she owned had a story. She was very intentional about her choices. You know, if they bought a sofa, it was because this sofa had a certain, you know, it was perfect for napping or it just was the right height or everything, every decision was so carefully made. And she took such, unlike me, she takes very good care of her things. She's not messy. She's not sloppy with her things. And anyway, so that's been hard to sit with her through the loss of those things. And she knows that stuff, we can't take it with us. You know, we were brought forth from dust. We to dust, we shall return. Right. But yeah, you can't take it with you. But while we're here, I sure think God wants us to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And hopefully use those stories to glorify him.
Okay. So the meaningful is that you have to enjoy it like every day. The process, what would be the process for deciding, okay, this item is worth keeping in a maximalist space? Yeah. So the process would be, okay, this I will enjoy every day. This has a great story.
Yes. Does it have a good story? Will I enjoy it every day? Or sometimes I even look at things and say, what season will I enjoy this for? In the book, I talk about seasons and systems, rituals and routines. Am I going to use that thing as part of a daily ritual? If I'm at a store and I'm thinking about buying a candle, is it going to be because I enjoy lighting the candle in the evenings as part of a ritual? Or it might even be a beautiful dish towel that I buy that I'm going to love using as part of washing the dishes, as part of that ritual. So yeah, I would ask myself questions like, also, for what season will I enjoy using this? So I have an antique booth locally that I sell my art, and then just stuff. I mean, when you're in the business of collecting stuff, you collect a lot of it, and I can't keep it all. Even if I could, I've needed to sell some of it over the past year. We jokingly say, my husband and I, that as entrepreneurs, it's either feast or famine. And when we get into famine mode, we got to sell the French sideboard, you know? I'm going to sell the art. And so I will just go through the house and declutter. And I just take the things up there. A lot of people do that with eBay, I've noticed. I think they have something that they really enjoy. I think they've probably got it in their house someplace, but they also have it listed on eBay. And I know this because I stalk eBay sometimes, and there'll be like a cute little antique doll cabinet or something. And I'm like, that's darling, but I'm not paying $575 for it. And then all of a sudden it'll go on sale. And it's 3 years later. And I'll be like, oh, she needs some cash. Sounds like me. So also like the quality of things, it gets harder and harder to find really good quality things. So especially if I find a good quality antique, something that's over 100 years old, I try to, especially if I haven't had to pay very much for it. If I paid a lot for it, sometimes I'm really just trying to flip it and get my money back out of it. But if it's a really good quality thing, I'll try to hang on to it for a while because I think about the story too. You know, my kids don't care about the story quite so much right now for some of that stuff. But I definitely think that as they get older, I will probably test these stories out. Be like, do you want me to keep this? Here's the story that goes with this. If you're not interested in the story, then you're not interested in the thing, and we're going to pass it. I'm going to make money on it while I'm still alive, kids. Thanks.
So in your house, is it 50-50, like, half is, I don't know, like from a furniture store, and half is from a vintage store, or everything is vintage, or everything is from, maybe the kids are more like, you know, IKEA, but your room is more vintage, or the living room?
My boys have a bunk bed that came from like Amazon or something. Okay.
Yeah, for the kids. Yeah.
Everything else, I'm trying to think. Everything else. We have, our dining chairs are from Restoration Hardware, because we needed sturdy chairs. If sometimes antique chairs are hard to find, but they look like antique English pine chairs. Everything else is vintage, or like Facebook Marketplace. It's all, every now and then I will have, I work with a local upholsterer, and if there's a chair or something that I'm looking for and I want to splurge, I'll have it custom. Like we have a sofa that we had custom made. And that's expensive to do. That's an investment. But it's a sofa. Like you sit on a sofa is probably, I talk a little bit about this in the book. A sofa is one of the most important things you can, I would say it's the best investment.
So yeah, I was gonna say, I would be so scared because I don't know how old are your kids, but I have a toddler. There's no way I can have anything vintage in my living room because she would put her dirty paws everywhere. And I would just die looking at my nice things. So did you have to wait a certain time that they grew a little bit, you know, to be more clean? Or did you always have like vintage things in your house and you're like, you know, you just got to have to be careful?
Yeah, that's a great question. We really have always had vintage things. I would say that a sofa is when my kids were born, so we don't own the sofa anymore that we owned when they were born. It went to a kid at college because there was so much stuff on that sofa, it wasn't even funny. There was breast milk on that sofa, throw up on the sofa, urine. Had it clean.
Your whole life. Your life was on that sofa.
Right. It was a really nice sofa at one point in time, but it really does not warrant any other residence than a fraternity house at this point in time. So that's where I'm pretty sure it went. But if I had used a little bit more prudence whenever I was purchasing that sofa before my kids were born, if I bought a leather sofa, it would have survived the kids if I had bought a really good leather sofa. I also could have had that sofa reupholstered if I had wanted to keep the frame, but I didn't buy a really classic, timeless frame. I think that's the other thing that I've learned over the years is to look at the lines, and I try to buy the oldest. I'm going to put an asterisk and say that there's a caveat to saying this. I try to buy the oldest looking thing I can find if I'm going to buy it new. So the highest quality, oldest looking thing, because I'm looking for those timeless lines. I'm looking for shapes and forms that are going to stand the test of time. So that's the other thing that was wrong with that sofa. But the rug that we had when they were born is a wool rug. It was an antique rug when I bought it. It was a good antique rug when I bought it. It wasn't cheap. We still have it. I mean, and life is on that rug too, 100%. And there are times we also went through a season of life. We moved a bunch for 5 years. We're done moving. My husband said we're not moving ever again, no matter what, which
my husband said that too.
Yeah.
6 years ago, he's like, this is the last house. I can't.
He's done. I think he'll divorce me if I say I'm moving. He's like, you're moving. I'm not. Have fun.
I'm staying here.
Right. So we moved, and because we ended up, we thought we were going to move once, and we ended up moving 5 times because things didn't work out. Over the course of all those moves, I did end up buying new things. Like I'd order a pair of nightstands from Wayfair but I made that they looked old. I'm always looking at lines and shape to make sure it looks old. And then interestingly enough, I've sold all that stuff since buying it. And then the other thing that I would say about having a toddler, because the other thing I talk about in the book is we entertain a lot. And I want people to be able to walk into our house and not feel like they can't have, they can't relax, they can't have fun, they can't enjoy themselves. And so I also say nothing can be more precious than they are. You know, like if a kid spills grape juice, first of all, we don't have grape juice in the house for this reason.
Me neither. But,
right. But, you know, if a kid spilled grape juice on my green velvet mohair sofa that I love, that I found on Facebook Marketplace for a tenth of the price, if I was going to go have it made or order it, custom order it, I would be like, it's not more precious than they are. I'm not going to get upset about this. I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to ruin. I'm not going to traumatize or hurt someone else because there is a spot on my sofa now. We're going to make a joke about now the sofa has patina. And we're going to make a joke about it. And I'm going to throw them a dish towel. And I actually have a friend who owns a local bookstore. She's hosting our launch party. If anyone's in Oklahoma City on April 29th and you want to come to the book launch party, you can. But she said, like, I have been in Whitney's house and spilled a glass of wine and she doesn't freak out. She throws you a dish towel and says, clean it. You know, and it just also interesting. I learned this at church, but you know what gets red wine out of stuff? White wine.
Really?
Yeah. The altar guild taught me that. You put white wine on top of it? Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
The altar guild taught me that. That's how they get the red wine out of their linens, is they put white wine.
They would know. Okay.
Yeah, I guess, right?
That's a good tip.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
Thank you. Yeah, the average age of the lady, the average age of the four ladies on the altar guild at our church is 85 years old. That's the average age of those women. Like, I am taking notes. Like, whatever they know it, you know?
Yeah.
That's wisdom. Okay. Anyway.
And a follow-up question about that. So how would you display something, you know, when you're maximalist, so something very sentimental, but you don't want to overcrowd, you know, the room. How will you display? Do you have like some recommendation? If you want to display like a collection or something sentimental?
I do believe in collections, and I talk about that in the book. The idea of grouping things, like things together. So let's say that I have a friend who loves trinkets. Like, she's got little statues and tiny, you know, mementos, like she was in somebody's wedding party and they got this as a gift. And it's all this little stuff. Little stuff makes a great collection. So you go find some type of case piece or shelf that hangs on the wall. You can find things like this at places like Hobby Lobby or Home. You kind of have to watch for it or look for it or have your eye on it. But you hang that thing on the wall. Sometimes there's like a little glass door. You open the glass door up. You put all the little things behind glass. It's almost like your grandmother's china cabinet, but you just hang it on the wall. And then somebody can walk up to that and say, tell me about some of this. You know, you could use a tiny bookshelf. You could put things in a shadow box, like a frame that's a shadow box.
Oh, I have a friend who did that. Uh-huh. She has like a little box on the wall and there's some picture in it and some little statues in it. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen this. Sometimes people take these old, their trays, their drawers from printer's cabinets. And it's kind of a country look, but it works in some instances. And they just hang that drawer on the wall. And it's a drawer with all these little boxes in it that the printers used to put metal blocks of type in. And they put that on their wall. And then you can put small, little tiny things in each of the things. But I'm always on the lookout for, because I sell these things in my antique booth, but I'm always on the lookout for like a little glass cabinet. It could be like, I think at Hobby Lobby, or sometimes you can find like miniature sized, like a little doll hutch or something like that. And you can, but you want to, if it's a bunch of little things, you want to try to figure out how to unify them by getting them displayed all in one spot. That's what I would say to that.
We have to say that your motto is that you have to organize first and after you decorate. So let's talk about that, because I'm not really good at organizing. I hate organizing anyway. But it's so nice when you do it. You feel so well after. Mm-hmm. So good for your soul, right?
I mean, here's how the title came about. I was doing something someday. I was puttering around the house, trying to decorate. And I thought to myself, Whitney, organize first, decorate second. Like it was something that came to mind. I was talking to myself in my head, trying to motivate myself to actually get up and tidy is probably what I was doing. I don't remember exactly what I was doing. I just remember that phrase came to mind. And I thought, that might make a good book title. And then when I presented, you know, my editor said, okay, we need some ideas for the next book. And I sent a list of options and she said, let's write about this. And we're always looking for the next great organizing book. And I said, okay, that's funny. I'm not naturally organized. And she said, but that's why you should write this book. And I'm like, we shall see. So because people do think I've made planners for a living for the past 10 years. Actually, a little bit longer than that. We're not making them anymore. I'm partnering with people who are making them, which is fun because it'll still allow me to stay in that space. they think that because I make a planner that I'm organized. And I'm like, no, you don't make a planner if you're organized. You don't. Like, you don't.
You don't need it.
Right. Necessity is the mother of invention. If you've got your stuff together, you're not in need of a planner. I was in need of a solution because of my creative out here doing, let's start another project instead of clean up the last one. Cleaning is not fun. Organizing is a little bit more fun than cleaning. Cleaning is worse than organizing, I think. What do you think? Do you clean? You
know, I hate it. If I could have a maid, I would have one every day and I would leave my house, go walk, come back and the house is clean. That's uh-huh. what I would do. Uh-huh. That's not the case. So, well, I'm trying not to let the things accumulate too much. Uh-huh. This way, you know, and I try to do a little bit every day because my
yes.
issue is when I have a project, it's everything now, the big thing now, and I want it to be done today. And sometimes I start big stuff, and of course, I don't finish it because after 2 hours, I'm like, I'm tired. I want to do uh-huh. something else. Oh, it's boring. You know, I want to do something else. Uh-huh. My question would be for, the follow-up question for that would be, so if people think that they're organizing their house so much, it will look sterile, what would you tell them? You know, that you don't want your house to look like a hotel or, you know, a hospital, or you still want life, you know, and your story uh-huh. you know, in your house. So uh-huh. if they think, okay, we need to organize everything, what would you tell them? No, you can organize, but you know, uh-huh. this is how the decor comes out.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Nobody's ever asked that. But here, let me respond with a story again.
Yeah, please.
So there is a profession out there. They call themselves stylists. So these are people that, like, say a magazine will hire, like House Beautiful will hire a stylist to go into somebody's house. So they House Beautiful editor, she went and found a decorator. That decorator had a client who was willing to pay for that house to be decorated. And now the magazine wants to photograph it. The magazine hires a stylist. The stylist comes in and styles the house. One of the principles the stylist uses for styling those magazine shots is called the human element. And it's the idea that the photograph cannot be too sterile. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be annoyingly perfect, but it's not going to be sterile. You know, there's going to be a dish towel hung over the edge of the sink, or you can even see this kind of in, if you open a Pottery Barn catalog and you, like, the way they style the dining room table is they put a stack of plates and a stack of forks and a pile of napkins, and they kind of shove it all to the center of a table. It's actually been a while since I've looked at a Pottery Barn catalog. So maybe they've changed it up. Maybe there's a different, like, human element trending in catalogs and photos right now. I'm not up to speed on that. But my point is that if you pick up a magazine or you pick up a catalog and you look for the human element, you're going to see that in these perfect pictures. You're going to see, like, a pair of shoes that are, you know, sitting beside the bed, or maybe it's an open book, or I've seen in New York, they do a show house every year called the Kips Bay Show House, and the proceeds benefit a nonprofit organization. And all these big fancy designers do it. So it's always fun to see what they do because they don't have a client. They're just executing their vision and their ideas. And so it's always a really great, fun thing to wait and see the photos of. And a couple of years ago, someone put an old school telephone, a designer named Mark Sykes, one of my favorite current designers. He is in LA. He's based out of LA. He put this, it was almost like vintage tech at this point. I mean, we all have a cell phone. Why would you put pretty much an old school, nice push button telephone with a cord? Why would you put that? And I can't remember exactly how it was styled, but maybe there was a cute cup of pens and a monogrammed notepad beside it, you know? So I think even if anything too sterile is not going to seem warm. And it's funny to think that even in these houses that really the designer and the homeowner has worked to make them perfect, it lacks that human element that makes the house look lived in and loved.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I entertain people, you know, of course I clean the house before everybody comes, but there's always going to be a toy laying somewhere or, you know, mm-hmm. and my husband would be like, you have to put the toys away. And I'm like, come on, we live here. So mm-hmm. why do that, you know? And even my mother, she's like, oh, you know, it's a happy mess here. I like the mess here. It's a happy mess. You know, it looks like it's a
I love
happy
that. Family.
So I think, I mean, something I wanted to ask you, I love to, you know, we take a lot of pictures with our phone, but you never go back and look at them. So right. what I like to do is to use that app when you can actually frame them and put them on your wall. But uh-huh. sometimes I think I'm going overboard. I have like a whole wall of pictures. Is it too much to have, you know, your house full of pictures everywhere on the walls? I have like painting and stuff, but I have a lot of pictures.
I actually don't think it is. Sometimes I would even go so far as to say, I don't think I have enough pictures. I think photos are really, really, really important in a home, especially if you have kids.
Yeah.
I think they tell the story that we're living. I think they recall memories. Those become memories, the things that my kids look at. You know, they look at those photos and they remember those photos. Now, my kids don't have phones, but now we've got the app on our phone that will pull the pictures back up kind of thing, mm-hmm. which is nice yeah. for me as a mom, be like, oh, my babies. But every now and then, I think it's a good habit. And I've not done this in a while, but I would like to. But there's always something else to you spend money on. But I think every now and then it's good to go through your phone and look at your favorites and just send some of those photos off to Walgreens and
yeah.
order some 5x7s of them. And maybe you change out what's in a few frames. Maybe if you've got a long wall, like on a staircase or a long hallway, we have a long hallway and the pictures are hung. There's a photo from when my husband and I first met. Somebody took it. This was before there were cameras on phones. This was in 2001. So we had just met and somebody took this photo, got it printed, and I found it years later. Like I found it in like 2016 or something. I couldn't believe I found it because so much happened between 2001 and 2016, you know? And so the photos are like a timeline. So it's our first photo and then it's our engagement photo and then it's our wedding photo and then the kids' photos. And so when you walk down the hall, you're kind of seeing the story. And I think that that's a really important part of the story that we are living is the role that other people play in that with us. So this gets to thinking about how we're going to pass on this legacy of home to our kids. It is important. So kind of to bring the conversation full circle, we started off by talking about some of the traumatic narrative of my upbringing. Part of the reason why that narrative is so traumatic is because my parents will not engage in the retelling of that narrative. They're afraid of that. They're afraid of that narrative. They are afraid that I'm not going to forgive them, or that maybe just these are things you don't talk about. I'm like, no, you do talk about them. You sent me to therapy, but you won't go yourself. like therapy, 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 early and often therapy. But when I have a fight with one of my kids, it is really important that if they storm off angry or I storm off angry, that we come back together and we reconcile. And Paul tells us to do this in the Bible. This is what Jesus did for us when he died on the cross, was he reconciled us to God. And when Paul's writing all these letters to all these early churches, he talks about, you know, if a brother sins against you, go to him first. If he still won't respond, take another brother with you. If he still won't respond, you know, treat him as a tax collector and a sinner, which does mean to still love them, by the way. But it's very important to me that my kid not run off to their room, slam the door shut, because the story that they are telling themselves in their head at that point in time is not the story that I want them to carry forward into life. I want them to carry forward a story of reconciliation. And so if we just get mad at each other and go slam doors because we're fighting over a mess on the dining table, or we don't fight over messes in our house. That's a first thing. But growing up, we did fight over messes at our house. That was the big fight most of the time. And so I think it's really important that we recognize that if we make our kids feel bad about stuff, that's going to be the story that they tell themselves. That's going to be the soundtrack, that the recurring soundtrack that plays in their head, you know, is that my mom's stuff mattered more than me. And if my daughter gets into my paint supplies and ruins a perfectly good paintbrush, I do get really upset. But I try not to get so upset that she knows she doesn't matter. The message that I'm trying to teach her is that we have to be good stewards of our things. And that includes our relationships. And our relationships, you know, that's paintbrushes and that's relationships. We can't just put paint on a paintbrush and then let it dry and get crusty so that no one can use it again, you know? Especially if it's a quality vintage paintbrush that I bought in a state sale for a dollar.
Of course it's vintage, of course.
Right?
I love that. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, that's not what you say, you know, relationship is so important. Sometimes you forget, especially as a mom, you just tell your kids, don't do this and that. But sometimes, yeah, they're more important than, you know, your things. Mm-hmm. One thing we didn't talk about, the fact that you have ADHD. So was it a big issue for you to, because I think when you have ADHD, the thing can get you very overwhelmed very quickly, right? So how did you deal with it? Because I'm sure you want your house to be also a functional, to have a clear mind. So can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I feel like there's a few different ways I can answer this question. So at the moment, one thing I'm thinking of, when you were talking a second ago about cleaning before somebody comes over, it made me think, like, one of the best ways to get your house clean is to have a party.
Yes.
You know?
That's true.
So that's my first answer, is have a party. Invite somebody over.
Yeah, that's what my husband doesn't like to entertain. He's like, oh, we have to clean the house. I'm like, yeah.
Right. And I would actually even go so far as, like, lots of times we'll have another family over for dinner from school or the neighborhood or something like that. And we'll just be like, we make pizza on Friday nights. And so we'll be like, we're making pizza. Come over and eat pizza with us. I actually don't clean up for pizza. I mean, the kitchen's clean. We're all sitting in there, but no one's, you know, it's not like a party where there's people milling around the whole house kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nothing makes you get things into order like a party. The other thing I would say, and this, there's a caveat to this statement too. I think it's very popular to say, like, oh, give yourself grace. You know, like, I actually asked my therapist one day a few weeks ago, I went into her office and I said, I just wrote a book on organizing and you would not believe the pile of laundry in my laundry room. What is wrong with me?
Oh, the laundry. It never stops.
It never stops.
So give yourself grace for this.
Yeah. So that's what she said. She said, give yourself grace. And I said, oh, no. That's the problem. Like, I am giving myself grace until the cows come home. Like, I can sit crisscross applesauce in my bed with my computer in my lap or my paintbrush in my hand. And I can give laundry. I will let laundry go to roost in the name of rest, you know? And so I kind of pushed back on her and I said, no, I feel like there's something else there. I feel like God has called us to stewardship, to whom much is given, much is required. And I want to lean into that challenge that, you know, yes, he's given me a creative mind, but that should not be carte blanche to leave half done finished projects all over my house. So I do try to balance things out. I have a gal who comes on Thursdays. She's actually here right now. Every Thursday she comes and she helps me, like, refinish furniture. She'll help me with paintings, you know, things that it's always creative. She's always helping me do. And sometimes what I ask for her help with is just cleaning up. I'm like, I don't feel like washing out the paintbrushes. You know, she's almost like a studio assistant. And, but, you know, even she'll leave. And sometimes she and I've made this huge mess on the driveway because we're painting a piece of furniture in the garage or something. And every now and then I'm like, okay, we have to clean the garage. Like, we have to stop and get a handle on things. The other thing that we've done, and we're not great about this, but we have three kids and they are supposed to, we are not great at holding them to this. They are 15, 14, and 12. They are supposed to rotate jobs every single day. So one kid is supposed to be in charge of laundry. One kid is supposed to be in charge of dishes. And one kid is supposed to be in charge of tidy, which is supposed to include feeding the animals, but it doesn't always happen. And I try to have grace for that. And they're pretty good about it. If we say, you need to do a load of laundry, they'll go do it. Like, they'll go, they're the ones making the laundry. They're the ones. I will put laundry away. And the next day there's like the folded t-shirt that got put away yesterday. They're in the laundry basket because they pulled it out and decided that they didn't want to wear it. And so let's just put it in the, anyway, it's constant. And I have to try. The other thing that's so encouraging though, is I remind myself, you know, if I will just set a timer for 10 minutes and do one room, that will last me 3 days.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I do that just when things are getting to be too much.
You're like me. You're like, you know, you want to do everything, you know, now, but it's so good when you just set little, you know, task one at a time and things get actually done when you do that. Because when you want to do the whole thing, sometimes you get overwhelmed and you're like, I'm not going to do it today.
Yeah, I get so overwhelmed when I do that. I mean, I can't, I'm like, give me no more than three things to do. If you give me more than three things, I'm going to shut down. Like, I'm just going to be like, I don't know where to start. Yeah. Just give me one thing and I'll do it.
Yeah, and also sometimes we don't have time. If you're a mom, you have a kid, you know, you have the kid, the husband, the job is too much. What would be the most important thing that you want people to know if they're going to buy your book? Because the title say it, you know, okay, you know, you have to organize before, you know, you decor, all right. But what else? What else would they find in the book that can help them?
I hope they find a different... I shared a lot of my story in the book and I've talked a lot about why story is important. And I would hope that they would find encouragement for those of us who maybe are a little bit neurodivergent. If you're struggling with mental health, if you're struggling with mild depression, or if you're having trouble, you know, if you picked up Marie Kondo's book, Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, and got really into the project and then dropped it. You know, I hope they would pick up my book and read it and realize they're not alone, and that together we can little by little, we can do this. Like, we can participate in life. You know, this is not a reason. Our struggles should not become shameful. This should not be any reason that we do not feel like we can share our homes with other people. And I hope if you are perfectly organized and you pick up my book, I hope it gives you insight into what it feels like to struggle with organization and struggle with caring what people think when they walk into your house, and realizing that if you're going to be one of those people who just cast judgment on others because their house isn't perfectly anything, you know, I would hope maybe it kind of helps those people have empathy for those who struggle as well.
All right. So where can we find your book then? Can they order it on Amazon? Is it on also, can you listen to it?
So the book came out on April 29th and it is available wherever fine books are sold. You can get the audiobook on Amazon at the very least. And you can also go to Organize First, Decorate Second. There are links to everywhere you can buy the book from that website.
Great. And of course, I would put all the information in the show notes. And, you know, people can just click on your Instagram, your YouTube also, right? You have a YouTube channel when you talk a lot of all your vintage love. That's what you want to.
And also Substack. I'll send you my Substack link. I'm really big on Substack. I'm really into Substack right now.
I'm sorry, what's Substack?
Substack. Okay, I'll tell you all about it. We're going to get you on Substack. It's like blogging, but
okay,
but
blogging,
but it's also like a little bit like a social media platform. So it feels a little bit old school. It feels like a little bit early Twitter days.
Okay, I don't think I heard of that one. Okay, I'm gonna check it out. All right. Anything you want to add? Maybe I didn't ask.
No, I've really enjoyed. You asked great questions. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for telling me that getting all the, my photo were good. It's not that bad to have them on the walls.
No, yes, I love it. Yes.
Thank you, Whitney. And
thank you.
Good luck with the book and everything else. And thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you so much.